Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevomos Daf Kuf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur more than halfway down the page. If you like counting, count up 16 lines from the bottom. The Gemara opens up with a quote from the Mishnah, Hanoderes Hano, and we saw in the Mishnah a situation where a woman vowed not to benefit the Yavam, and in that context there were two scenarios. There was a situation where she vowed not to grant benefit to the Yavam during her husband's lifetime, and a case where she vowed thusly after he was dead. In the case that she vowed during the husband's lifetime, so we assume that she didn't have in mind to prevent the act of Yibum, namely in the event that her husband would die, and then she would be a Yevama, that she had that in mind. After all, she vowed while her husband was still alive. So, in the event that when the husband actually dies, the Mishnah told us we force the Yavam to do Chalitza, because this woman has a vow not to benefit him. How can they possibly live together in such a way where he wouldn't be deriving benefit from her? And as such, since the vow was not directly against the act of Yibum, so we don't want the Yavam marrying her and then living in sin. However, if she vowed thusly after the husband died, then mivakshin, then we request the Yavam, because she is the one that's instigating, so to speak, the lack of Yibum in a direct fashion, and he wants to do the mitzvah of Yibum, so we can't force him to do Chalitza. And rather, if she wants to put herself into a position where she's going to be forbidden to do Yibum because of her vow against the Yavam after her husband's death, that's, so to speak, her problem. And if the Yavam wants to cooperate and grant her a release through Chalitza, then all the better. But there's a difference, as we said, between a vow that wasn't directly against the act of Yibum. There we said, in the event that the husband actually dies, that kind of vow was taken when he was alive. There we force the Yavam to do the Chalitza. However, if the vow was taken after the husband died and it was a direct confrontation that she initiated against the act of Yibum, then we don't force him to do the Chalitza. The Gemara itself opens up with a Tanaic source that has a lot of information in it that's only one of the points is, we'll see direct relevance to us after the Tanaic source. So let's begin with the Gemara. Tanan Hossam, there's a Tanaic source that's found in Maseches Nedarim. Borishoina Hoyu Omrim, at the in the beginning, you'll see a couple lines later, he said again a dashed underline Chozulom, represents a second stage in the halachic development of this issue. So he said first they used to say Shalosh Noshim Yoitzeis V'Noitlis Ksuba, three women, three situations, three examples that will leave the marriage, they'll be divorced, and they will get paid the ksuba payment. Ha'oimeres Tamei Loch, if a wife of a Kohen claims she was raped. The word Tamei literally is defiled, but the act of rape is considered a form of defilement. And she claims that she was raped. And as you probably know, the wife of a Kohen, even if she's raped, becomes Asura, forbidden to her husband. So based on her claim, that she was raped, we believe her, and the marriage has to be disbanded. However, she doesn't lose out. She didn't do anything wrong. Of course, this is in contrast to the wife of a Yisrael, of a non-Kohen. There we say that the woman is allowed to go back to her husband. Here's a case she cannot go back to her husband, and therefore she is to be divorced, but she gets the ksuba. Number two, Hashomayim Beini Levencha. A woman makes a claim like that. Literally, heaven stands between us. Rashi offers his pshat, and Tosfos has a slightly alternative pshat, but for our purposes, we're going to go with the Rashi. He says, Hashemayim Beini Levencha, Galuv Yodua Lefonav, the Almighty, he's the only one that knows, She'in Cha Nizkak Li Kederach Bnei Adam, that you don't have intimacy with me as other people do. V'ein Ish Eid L'Hochiach Bein Shneinu, and there's no one to prove that. So she says, heaven be my witness, that you don't have intimacy with me. And of course, that's a serious deprivation for the woman. And number three, Netula Ani Min Hayudim. Let's take a look at Rashi. Netula Min Hayudim. Nodra He Shaloti Boyal Yehudim. She vows not to have intimacy with Jews. Umid Osir Navsho Akuli Almo. From the fact that she's saying, I don't want to have intimacy with anybody. Shmamino Tashmish Koshela. It must be that the act of intimacy itself is difficult for her. It's painful. The anusahin, she's under a situation of duress. She's a situation that's beyond her control. Lefikach noitelis ksuba. So therefore, in this case as well, she will get the ksuba. So we have three examples of women who will be divorced and will also receive the ksuba. Due to these, we'll say these claims that she is making, that she is, so to speak, the victim of circumstances. These are examples of divorce where it's beyond the husband himself initiating the divorce. That, of course, when a man initiates a divorce, so he has to pay the woman the ksuba. But here we have a case that the husband isn't initiating the divorce per se, and yet he has to pay the ksuba. Chazru Lomar, then the Chachomim had a change of heart, and they said, Shalotei Isha Noisenes Eineho Biachir Umekalkelis Albala. A woman could possibly become fond of someone else. Nosenes Eineho Biachir literally is she places her eyes on someone else. In other words, she wants to be free from this marriage. She wants to be with someone else. And in order to prevent a woman from being motivated upon finding favor in the eyes of someone else, she might say, oh, I'm going to get out of this marriage, get my money in the ksuba, and be done with it. So this situation where we give her believability, as we just saw in these three cases, the Chachamim figured we're not going to believe her so quickly. Ella, ha'imeres teme'ani loch, a woman who says to her husband, the Kohen, you know, I was raped, Tavi Raya Lidvara, let her bring proof to that. Otherwise, we suspect that maybe she's interested still in getting out of the marriage and getting her ksuba money along with it. Hashamayim Beini Levencha, as Rashi explained before, she is claiming that he doesn't have intimacy, her husband doesn't have intimacy with her. So, Yasu Derech Bakosha, we turn to the husband and request of him to behave nicely. Number three, Netula Ani Min Hayudim. Yofer Chalko, the woman had sworn that she's not going to have intimacy with anybody. Well, practically speaking, she's a married woman. She can't have intimacy anyway with anybody. So who was her vow directed against? So it was certainly directed against her husband. So the husband undoes Yofer Chalko. He annuls the portion of the vow that has applicability to him. Umishamashtoi. She then will have intimacy with him because he annulled the vow, and she remains a usher to the rest of the Jews. And that's fairly obvious. She's a married woman. Ibayalaho, a question is raised. Netula ani min hayehudim layovam mau. Now we start tying things more into our topic, where she vows this vow not to have intimacy, and she says that to the Yavam. Or she says this vow, let's be more accurate, she had made this vow, and she had made this vow when her husband was alive. If we look in the Rashi, she made this vow when her husband was alive. What effect does this vow have with regard to the Yavam? Gemara continues with the analysis. Mi masko adaita demayespailo v'nofla kami Yavam. Do we say that while she was married, she entertained the possibility of her husband dying, leaving no children, and that she would in fact be available to the Yavam, and her neder, her vow, would have bearing. That the very vow that she took while she was still married to her husband incorporated or entailed the Yavam as well, because this was on her mind. Oiloi, or maybe we don't say thusly. Let's take a look at Rashi. The Rashi we're looking at is in the wide lines under the Gemara, about the fifth line under the Gemara text. Mi maska adaita demayis bailo, below bonim. Does it occur to her, though she's currently married, that her husband might die, leaving no children, nafla kami yavam, and she would then become a yavamav to marry the yavam. Venotranami adaita didei. And her vow is with him in mind also. U ba'al lo hefer ela lechelko. A ba'al, when he annuls a vow, he annuls only the portion that's relevant to him. Ela, that's the yavam, nami lo motzi mefer. The yavam can't annul the vow. Shafilu ba'al ein mefer bekoidmin. Even a regular husband cannot annul vows that were taken before he married her. And as a result of this, v'asurlo, she would be ushered to the Yavam. Oi, Rashi continues, oi loy asko adaito. Or it doesn't occur to her, velo nodra zu eloleser atzmo al kol mi shemuteres lo ayude geirushe bailo. Or we say that the vow that she took when she says, I am removed from the Jews, that was Netulani Minu Yudim, where she vowed not to have intimacy with anybody. What her intention was, to restrict herself from all those that she would be allowed to be with upon her divorce. So we have a woman that was anticipating divorce. What would that do? That would open her up to lots of other people, but not to the Yavam, because a woman divorced by a man is not allowed to then marry his brother. You might ask, well, why was she vowing thusly? Lahafis, why was she vowing as a married woman that she is going to be netula min hayudim, that she's not going to have relations with anybody? Lahafis taita shabal shaloyach shedena b'noisenes ena b'acher kdei sheyisratza legarsha. She vowed this way so as that the husband should not suspect her of having some other fellow in mind. And she did this in order for the husband to agree to divorce her. Of course, if she was trying to get out of a marriage only because of being desirous of some other man, so her husband's not going to divorce her. But if she can demonstrate that that's not why she wants out of the marriage, she does so by telling him, listen, you know, I really want to be divorced, but it's not because I'm running off to some other man. In fact, my vow proves it. Avol ayavam sh'asura loy v'imedes afilu achagirishin. But as far as the yavam is concerned, she is Osrutim right now, and she'll be Osrutim after the divorce that she wants. Loi niskavno. She didn't have that in mind. She didn't have the Yavam in mind. Umuteres loi imeis bailo velo girsha. And as a result, if her husband would die and not divorce her, she would be muteres to the Yavam. So it's all a question of what did she have in mind when she said Netula ani min hayudim with regard to the Yavam. The Gemara continues. We have two opinions. Rav Omar, Yavam Einoi Kibal. Rashi says, Eino Kibal, Shiet Sorech Lohafir Kibal. The Yavam is not like the Baal that there's even a need to annul the vow. The Daita de Baal Nodra, she vowed with the husband in mind. Vitzorechu Lohafir, the husband, he has to annul the vow. Avol Yavam Muteres Beloi Haforah. But as far as the Yavam is concerned, the Yavam was not on her mind whatsoever. And she's mutter to him without any need for annulment of vows. Ushmuel, we continue in the Gemara. Ushmuel Omar Yavam Harehu Kibal. The Yavam is like the Baal, and the vow would have ramifications, restrictions with regard to the Yavam. And as we go on in the Gemara, there's a point, we're calling this a long point. We also have a marking on the side under the Mivneh heading. The house marking appears in two different directions. When the point is facing up, it's a Siwal Divrei Rav, an attempt to support Rav. The inverted house will be an attempt to reject the support. Omar Abaye, we continue in the Gemara, Kavose de Rav Mistabra. It's most likely like Rav's approach. And what was Rav's approach? That when she vows Netula Ani Min Hayudim, the Yavam is not on her mind. Again, once again, we want to emphasize, she's vowing thusly as a married woman. So when she's still married, and she vows thusly the Yavam, it's not a vow against the Yavam. And now the Abaye proves it. He tries to prove it that from, he says, like Rav is mistaber, is most likely, this non. In our Mishnah, we were taught, Hanuderis Hanomi Yavama Bechaye Baila, a woman who vows not to benefit the Yavam when her husband is still alive. She's angry with him. The Yavam insulted her, and it got her anger worked up, and she vowed against him while her husband was alive. Kaifen oisoi shiachlots. When the husband dies, leaving no children, we force him to do chalitza. What's the reason for this? Because when she vowed thusly during her husband's lifetime, she wasn't intending to vow against an eventual yibum with him after the death of her husband. If she had in fact vowed against and made a vow that was directly against the coming together in the context of Yibum with the Yavam, then we wouldn't force him to do Chalitza. And as the Gemara goes on to say, Ve'im Isa Damaska Adaita, if it were so that she had taken that into consideration, that she was vowing against being with him in intimacy as a Yavam, then the Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis, Mevakshin Miboyale. Then, as we saw when we learned the Mishnah, and we said at the opening of today's Shir as well, then we would not force him. He wants to do the mitzvah of Yibum. And she is the one initiating the abandonment of that mitzvah through her vow. And in such a case, we wouldn't force him to do Chalitza. He wants to do the mitzvah. just because she's vowing against doing taking a vow directly against that mitzvah, we would merely ask of him to release her, but not force him. At this point, the Gemara rejects this and says, "Hocha b'mayaskinon." The case that we are dealing with here in the Mishnah of a Yavama that's noderis against the Yavam, and she doesn't take into consideration the coming together with the Yavam as a result of the husband's dying without children. You know what the case is in the Mishnah? Be'isha she'yesh la bonim. We're dealing with a married woman that also has children. So her husband and she have children. So we have a situation, she's not even a candidate for Yibum whatsoever. Not only is she married, but she's with a man that had children with her. And of course, Yibum is done only with a woman whose husband died leaving no children. Dekule hai lo masko adaita. When we said in the Mishnah that kaifen oisa in shiachlots, it's because that far she doesn't, a woman wouldn't ever consider. Meaning that the children would die before her husband, and then her husband would die, and only then would she become eligible to the Yavam. So that kind of situation, that kind of woman that has children with the husband, she does not, her vow right now against the Yavam is not a vow to avoid or to undo the mitzvah of Yibum per se, because at this point she's far away from even being a candidate for Yibum. However, and we have to spell this out, if she was a married woman, but she didn't have children, she's only one step away from Yibum, namely her husband dying, leaving no children. And in such a case, even though she is married, she would be, she is considering the Yavam as well. And then, if that be the case, the ruling in a situation where she said Netula ani min hayudim, in the lifetime of her husband, as far as the Yavam is concerned, that vow would prevent the Yibum from taking place. The Gemara continues now with a response, an undoing of the rejection. So that with this, and we have a long marking as you can see, with this we're reinstating the position that Abaye took. So according to what was just said, that the Mishnah is talking about an unusual circumstance, we'll call it an extreme circumstance, a woman who is extremely distant from Yibum, because not only is she currently married, but she also has children. Aval, according to that analysis then, ein lo bonemai, a married woman that has no children, and she was noderes hano miyavama, she vowed not to benefit the Yavam. My, what would the din be? So you're saying according to this answer, she does have the Yavam in mind when she vowed against the Yavam, b'chaye baila. She would have him in mind. Then, mevakshin. Then we would request of the Yavam in the event that the husband dies to do chalitza, not force him. So we have a situation of mevakshin simply by contrasting the case of ein lo bonim to the case of yesh lo bonim. Staying with the situation of a woman who made a neder against the Yavam because she was angry. Aditoni, therefore, instead of teaching as the Mishnah did, im niskavna lekach, if she had specific kavona against Yibum, in other words, she had specific kavona that her husband would die leaving no children, then the Mishnah said, afilu b'chaye bailo, even if she had vowed in the lifetime of her husband, mevakshin mimenu shiach lo tzla. Then we request of him, and we don't force him. But notice, in order to come up with the case of mevakshin, we have to say niskavno lekach. She had specific kavana not to be with the yavam. Well, why spell out, or why go to that case, liflog, velisni, bedida? Why not stay within the example you started off with and make a distinction within that? Bamed v'mamurim, when would we force her? This is what the Mishnah should have said if the Gemara's rejection above was correct. It should have said, when is it that we do kaifin? B'shiyesh lo bonim, when the woman is not only married, but she also has children. Aval ein lo bonim mevakshin. But if she had vowed against the yavam, and she happens to be married but without children, then mevakshin, then we request of him, we don't force him. Now, but the Mishnah didn't make that distinction. There's a distinction between yesh lo bonim versus ein lo bonim. Ela shma mino, so therefore we have to conclude from the fact that the Mishnah did not make that distinction. Lo shna yesh lo bonim, velo shna ein lo bonim. It makes no difference whether she has children or not. Kaifin oisoi kirav, we'll force the yavam eventually when her husband dies, just like Rav had said in the analysis of the neder of Netula Min HaYudim, that she doesn't have the yavam in mind. Therefore, it wasn't a vow against the mitzvah of yibum, against that option of doing yibum. Therefore, when the husband actually dies, so we request. Therefore, we force him. We force the yavam to do the yibum, so that they wouldn't live a life of sin, of violating her neder. Shma mino. So this is conclusive, like Rav. As you can see, that completes the 13th perek, and now we begin the 14th perek. Take note of the fact it's a very long Mishnah. Many of the examples that are featured in this Mishnah we have already discussed in recent Shiurim, in recent Dapim, because the Gemara was quoting liberally from this Mishnah. So we have, in effect, a one long Mishnah that covers the Perek. On the side, we have an introductory note, a nose, a topic heading, Nisuin bein pikhim v'chareshin, Be'achim. We're going to see many cases, different cases of marriages between normal individuals. Pikhim represents normalcy. Chershim are deaf mutes, with the cases of brothers that married two sisters, two brothers married two sisters, or the two brothers had married two unrelated women. As you can see, it's a very long Mishnah wise for us. It represents the entire perek of Mishnayos. The diamond that you see under the Mivneh heading, Havlotas Tchilas Hamikrim, the diamond highlights the beginning of cases, of situations. The squiggle underline is Hadgoshas Zehu Sa'achim. We're going to simply try to give a little introduction each time as what is the identity of the brothers. Are they normal or are they cheresh? A double underline, when you see that, it highlights the word mace. One of the two brothers is dying, and you'll be able to see clearly which brother is dying in each case. There are numerous other structural references that we could have made, but we didn't want to overdo it. However, there's one more point that we trying to highlight structurally. If you go down the side of the text between the Mishnah text and the Rashi, you'll notice that we made reference to Achoyos and then Nochrios. So in a superstructure form, the first several cases deal with two brothers that are married to two sisters. And in addition to that, you'll notice there's a type of dash underlining that we use throughout the Mishnah. So the first several cases deal with two brothers married to two sisters. Later, we'll see cases where the brothers are married to nochrios, to women that are not related to one another. So now we pick up with the Mishnah, and as we said, just to repeat what we mentioned just a bit before, a number of points in this Mishnah have been discussed at some length already in previous shiurim. So if you find that our explanation is a little bit thin, bear that in mind, that we've already dealt with many of the points. Cheresh shenosa pikhis upikach shenosa chereshes. When you're dealing with a deaf mute, you should realize the marriage is a marriage that is done with someone that is not of sound mind. They're considered incompetent. They're deaf mutes. And though there is a marriage, it's a marriage that we can assume is on a rabbinic level. So, because in order for a Torah level marriage to take place, you have to have you have to have the presence of two sound minds, a man who is offering his hand in marriage to a woman, and the woman of sound mind accepting it. There's another situation of a father marrying off his daughter who is a minor. There we say the father is of sound mind. So our Mishnah described a marriage where one of the partners in the couple is an incompetent by virtue of their being deaf mutes. Imrotzu lahotzi yotzi. If he wants to, after marrying, to disband the marriage, so he can divorce her. Vimrotzu lekayim yekayim. If he wants to maintain the marriage, he can maintain the marriage. Kishem shu koines b'remiza, kach hu motzi b'remiza. Just like the entrance to the marriage was not through a verbal, formal declaration, but was some type of motion. We're dealing once again with a deaf mute. Remiso, as we'll say, is a type of motion. So just like the entrance was done that way, the exit is done that way. There's no let's say difference in terms of mental capacity between the entrance and the exit, and therefore it can be done. This is in contrast to a situation if, let's say, the entrance was done on a Torah level, but then the circumstances for that during departure don't apply anymore. So then the halacha will have to take that into consideration. The case will be different. Kipikach shenosa pikhis, a case of two people of sound mind, man and woman, that married. However, v'nischarsha, she became a chareshes in the course of their marriage. Imrotza yotzi, imrotza yekayim. If the husband wants to divorce her, he can do so, and if he wants to maintain the marriage, he can do so as well. You'll ask, but she's not of sound mind anymore. So bear in mind that as far as Torah law is concerned, and we're not talking about applied halacha right now, but as far as Torah law is concerned, a woman, as far as divorce is concerned, can be divorced even without her approval. So therefore, her soundness of mind with regard to divorce is of no relevance. Nishtates lo yotzi. If she, however, became an imbecile, then on a rabbinic level we say do not divorce her, because if she leaves his home, she's going to be subject to violation on the part of men that are in the public. Nischaresh hu oy nishtatet. if the man who was once of sound mind now became a deaf mute or became an imbecile, eino motzia oilamis, he cannot divorce her ever. Since the kiddushin was a full-fledged kiddushin, we're dealing once again with a couple, both of whom were of sound mind. It's a Torah level bonding in marriage. In order to undo that, you'd have to have him at the same Torah level, but he's now lost it. He became a deaf mute, he became a shoyte, so he can't get rid of her ever. He can't divorce her. His divorce document will have no significance. Omar Reb Yochanan ben Nuri, Mivnei ma ho'isha shinizcharsha yoitza vo'ishin izcharish eino motzi. Reb Yochanan addresses the topic we've been discussing till now, why the distinction between a woman who became a deaf mute, she can be divorced. A man who became a deaf mute cannot do so, cannot divorce her. Omru lo, so they answered Reb Yochanan ben Nuri. Eino doime ho'isha megaresh li'isha hamizgareshes. You cannot compare the man who is divorcing to a woman who is becoming divorced. Shoisha yoytzu l'ritzoinu v'shalo l'ritzoinu. A woman is divorced, leaves the marriage through divorce, whether she approves or even if she does not approve. Again, this is true on a Torah level. We're not dealing with applied halacha. V'ha'ish eino motzi el l'ritzoinu. The man, on the other hand, can divorce only if he so desires. If he's forced, it's not considered a kosher divorce, and in this case, he is not of sound mind during the time of the divorce. So therefore, his divorce is of no value. Heid Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda al Hachareshis Shesiovia. Rabbi Yochanan told us about an incident of a deaf-mute woman that was married off by her father when she was a ktana, when she was a minor, and the father accepted the marriage, the offer of marriage from the husband on his daughter's behalf, which is a power that the father has granted to him by the Torah. Hence, that's a full-fledged kiddushin. True, the girl is a chareshis, she's a deaf mute. She yoitza beget. She can be divorced through a get. Omru lo, af zu kayotze ba. And they told him, they said that this case as well is similar, the case of a pichis shenizcharsha. The pichis was an adult woman that was of sound mind that subsequently became a chareshis. She too, as we said earlier, can be divorced. And now we continue in the Mishnah with cases of actual Yibum. Up till now we weren't dealing with Yibum, but now we focus on case of Yibum, and in order to have a case of Yibum, you have to have two brothers, obviously. One then dying, leaving no children, and then a surviving brother. Shnei Achim Chershin Nisuim. If two brothers that are both deaf-mutes. Who did the two brothers marry? You'll see here three possibilities. L'shtei achoyos chershos, two sisters. And as we said earlier, just take note again, this section of the Mishnah, and we've noted this along the side of the Mishnah text, these cases involve two brothers that marry two sisters. So you have two brothers that marry two sisters, but they're both chershos. They were both deaf-mutes. O l'shtei achoyos pichos, or the two deaf-mute brothers married two normal sisters. O l'shtei achoyos, achas chareshes v'achas pichis. One of the sisters was a deaf mute and the other normal. O l'shtei achoyos chershos nisuin. And here we present cases from the women's standpoint. You have two sisters, and you can see we have this unusual type diamond because here within this list of examples, we're focusing on the two sisters. Up till now, the focus is on the two brothers who had marry two sisters. We're looking at it from the brother's standpoint. Here we focus on two sisters and see who they married. There's going to be a point of overlap, obviously, as we go through these three examples. You have two sisters that are hareshos, that are both deaf mutes, nisuin. Lishnei achim pikvin, two normal brothers. O lishnei achim chershin, or to two brothers that are deaf mutes. Now here, you see, this is similar to the case number one, just two lines above, where we had two deaf mute brothers married to two deaf mute sisters, and that's what we're describing here: two deaf mute sisters married to two deaf mute brothers. Oy lishnei achim, or two brothers, echad cheresh veechad pikeach. The two deaf mute sisters are married to two brothers, one normal and the other a deaf mute. Hare elu p'turin min achalitza u'min ayibum. When you're dealing with deaf mutes, so the mitzvah of chalitza does not apply because they are incapable of reading the psukim that the Torah necessitates for the chalitza ceremony. So, as a result of that, they are exempt from the mitzvahs of chalitza and the mitzvah of yibum. Of course, as far as yibum is concerned, you know, when you have a brother that dies and he's then looking upon his wife's sister, there's also no chance of marrying her based on the fact that she's achos ishto. So the comment that we made regarding chareshos in general, that they don't do chalitza and they don't do yibum, here, even without that particular explanation, since you're dealing with the brothers are married to two sisters, any case of a surviving brother, he's looking at achos ishto, the sister of his wife, and that is the basic exemption of the mitzvah of yibum and chalitza. However, if they are both, the two women are unrelated to one another, then when one of the brothers dies, there's a mitzvah of yibum to perform with the widow. Yichnosu, so they marry. And if they want to then divorce her, then they can do so. But notice, what's the option? The only option here is to do yibum itself, because there is no chalitza when you're dealing with a cheresh and a chareshes. They have to say the psukim that the Torah demands, and they cannot do so. So yibum is done, and if they should want to then divorce, so the divorce can take place. Shnei achin, echad cheresh v'echad pikeach, two brothers, one is normal and one is a deaf mute, nisuin l'shtei achoyos pikos, married to two sisters, both normal. Meis cheresh baal hapikchis, the deaf mute brother dies. Ma yasa pikeach baal hapikchis, what should the surviving brother do? So, and bear in mind that the surviving brother is married to a woman, and the Yavoma there is a sister of his wife. Well, Teitzei Mishum Achos Isha, the Yavoma is exempt because she is a sister of his wife. Now, the other way around, Meis Pikeach Bala Pikhis, the normal brother dies here, leaving a wife. And here, this marriage was a Torah-level marriage. Ma'yasa cheresh baal pikhis, what can the deaf-mute surviving brother who is married to her sister on a rabbinic level, what is he to do? Motzi ishto beget, he's going to have to divorce his wife. You'll ask, why will he have to divorce his wife? So the answer to that is that his connection with his wife is only a rabbinic type connection. The zika, the bond, the yibum bond of the widow is a Torah-level bond. It's coming as a result of a full-fledged Torah-level marriage to the deceased brother. So that high-level Yibum bond is stronger than the surviving brother's marriage to his own wife. And he can't stay there with his wife, because his wife represents a problem of Achois Zukukasu. She's the sister of a woman who is truly bound to him. So he has to divorce his wife with a get. And just to repeat ourselves, the marriage with his own wife is only a rabbinic level marriage. That doesn't have the strength of repelling the Yavama on the grounds that the Yavama is the sister of his own wife. So the Yavama, the sister-in-law, has a stronger presence here. So he can't stay with his own wife. V'eshes ochiv asur li'olam. But ironically, the Yavama herself is usher forever, because the surviving brother is a cheresh and he can't do chalitza. So you notice he can't take in the yavama, and he cannot do. And why can't he take in the yavama? Because she is the yavama herself is the sister of his own wife, and even if he divorces her, it's still called she's the sister of his divorcee, which is also a prohibited relationship. The Yibum, that's not an option because he's a Cheresh. He can't recite the required Psukim. Shnei Achim, another case. Shnei Achim Pikhin, two normal brothers, Nisuin, L'shtei Achoyos, married to two sisters, Achas Chareshes V'Achas Pikhis. One of the sisters is a deaf mute and the other normal. Meis Pikeach Baal Chareshes, Ma Yaseh Pikeach Baal Pikhis. In this case, the Yavama is a Chareshes. What should the Pikeach, the normal brother, the surviving brother, do? Well, he can't marry her. This is his wife's sister. Teitzei Mishum Achos Isha. So the Chareshes, the deaf-mute widow, goes free because Yibum is not even in the cards. She is his wife, the surviving brother's wife's sister. Meis pikeach baal pikhis. The normal brother died. And now you have, again, when you have a pikeach baal pikhis, you're dealing with a situation of a strong Torah-level marriage with a Torah-level zika created. So you have a pikhis with a full-fledged zika falling to... So ma yase pikeach baal chareshes. What should the normal surviving brother, who is currently married to her sister, but she's a deaf mute, which is a low-level marital bond, what should he do? Motzi es ishto beget. He'll have to divorce his own wife, because she is now usher to him. She's the sister of the Yavama that's zekuka to him on a higher level. V'es eshes ochiv bechalitza. Now, he can't marry the widow because he just divorced his wife, and the widow is now the achos grushasa. She's the sister of a woman that he had divorced. So in order to free her from the Torah level bond, he does chalitza with her. Shnei Achin, Echot Cheresh Ve'Echot Pikeach. Here we have two brothers. One is normal, and one is a deaf mute. Nisuin L'Shtei Achoyos, Achas Cheresh's V'Achas Pikachas. The two sisters that the two brothers are married to, likewise, one is normal and one is not. One is a deaf mute. And they're paired up with each other. Meis Cheresh Baal Chereshes. The deaf mute dies. What should the surviving brother do? Well, he's not going to marry the Yavama. The Yavama is his wife's sister. The Yavama goes free because she isn't even a candidate for Yibum. the normal brother dies and leaves the widow with a very strong Torah level zika, yibum bond to the surviving brother. Ma yasa cheresh bal chareshis. What is the surviving brother to do? Motzi es ishto beget. He'll have to divorce his own wife. His own wife is forbidden because she is the sister of a. If his own wife is bound to him with a low level marital bond, and there's an overpowering Torah level zika yibum bond coming from the sister-in-law, so he can't stay with his own wife. The widow, unfortunately, has no solution. She remains usur to everybody because the cheresh cannot release her through chalitza. And as we said, he certainly cannot marry her either. Shnei achin, echot cheresh, echot pikecha. Now notice here, we're going to deal with examples with the two women are not sisters. You're not going to have the issue of achos isha coming up here. Two brothers, one is a cheresh, v'echad pikeach, one is normal. Nesuin l'shtei nochrios. The word nochrios means unrelated women. And they're pikchos, they're both of sound mind. Meis cheresh bal pikchis. The brother that was a deaf mute, he dies. Mayase pikeach bal pikchis. What should the surviving normal brother do? Ocholetz omiyabim. He has both options open. He can do chalitza, he can release her, and he can also do yibum. And why is yibum a possibility? Because she's not related. This widow is not related to his own wife. Meis pikeach bal pikchis. Mayas acherish bal pikchis. The normal brother dies. Surviving brother is a deaf mute. So what does he do? So you'll notice immediately the cherish is the surviving brother. Chalitza is not an option. So kones, he can take her in. Now, what is he taking in? He's taking in a woman that is bound to him on a Torah level. V'eino moitzi li'olam. He cannot release her ever. Get that he would give is a. It's a low level get. We're dealing with a person that is considered an incompetent. So his get is not strong enough to divorce, to free up a woman whose bond to him is a Torah level bond. He can take her in, but he can't get rid of her. Shnei achin pikhin nesuin l'shtei nochrios. Achas pikhis v'achas chareshis. Here the two brothers are both normal, and they're married to two women, but one is not a pikhis, one is a chareshis. Mace pikeach bal chareshis. Ma yase pikeach bal pikhis. The husband that had been married to the deaf mute died, so that this particular brother is leaving a widow who is a chareshis. What should the other brother do? Kones, he can take her in. Notice, chalitza is not an option here because the widow is a chareshis. She can't recite the psukim, so she's not fit for chalitza, so he can take her in. Bimrotzu lahotzi, if the pikeach brother wants to divorce her, yotzi, he can do so. The fact that she's a chareshis doesn't bother us because for divorce, you don't need her soundness of mind. Meis pikeach bal pikchis. Ma yase pikeach bal chareshes. The pikchis here is the widow in this case. The bond is a full-fledged Torah level yibum bond. What does the surviving pikeach brother do? Ocholetz omiyabim. He has both options open to him. Shnei achim, echad cheresh ve'echad pikeach, nesuim l'shtei nochrios, achas chareshes v'achas pikchis. You have two brothers, one is a cheresh, the other is a pikeach, that are married to two women, unrelated to each other, that have those same characteristics. Meis cheresh bal chareshis, ma yase pikeach bal pikchis. The widow in this case is a deaf mute. What does the normal surviving brother do? So he, well, the Mishnah says kones, he can take her in. You notice there's no chalitz option because she is, the widow is a chareshes, so he can take her in marriage. Vimrotza lahotzi yotzi, and if he wants to divorce her, he can do so. Meis pikeach baal pichas, the pikachas is now the widow, and she is such with a Torah level zika. Mayasa cheresh baal chareshes, what does the surviving deaf mute brother do? Kones, he can marry her. Vieno motzi leolam, but he cannot send her away ever because he is a cheresh, and he's viewed as an incompetent, and he's married a woman whose bond is a Torah level bond, so his get cannot break that. Before we continue with the Gemara, we glance at the side where you see a Nosei Mivneh heading. Triangles appear, and they represent Sidra Shel She'elois, a series of questions. My Shna, each question begins with, what is the difference? My Shna, Hevdelim Bein Chershim Shoitim Uktanim B'Takonos Shonos. Differences between deaf mutes, imbeciles, and minors regarding different takonas, different rabbinic enactments. The crown shape is Havlotas Noisei Hatakonas. We emphasize the topic under discussion. They include Nisuin, marriage, two, Niun, the ability of a girl who is a minor who was married off by her brother or mother in a rabbinic marriage to walk out of the marriage through an expression of, I don't want to be with him anymore. Three, Achilas Truma, the ability of a woman who's married to a Kohen to eat Truma, the entitlement she has to Truma as a result of marrying a Kohen. And four, the Ksuba, the money that a woman is guaranteed in upon entering marriage in the event of divorce or becoming a widow. Omar Romi Bar Chamoi, continue now in the Gemara. My Shna Cheresh v'Chareshes Detokinu l'Rabbonan Nisuenu My Shna D'Shoita V'Shoita D'Lo Tokinu l'Hu Rabbonan Nisuen. What is the difference where we find by a man and a woman that are deaf mutes, where there is a rabbinic enactment of marriage, where marriage can be done, it's recognized, of course, as a rabbinic marriage, whereas in the case of imbeciles, there is no such takona, the sanya, and that's illustrated in the following Tanaic source: Shoita the Koton, Shinosu Noshim Umesu, an imbecile or a male who's a minor who married women and died, Nishosim Turos Menachlitzim Yibum. Their wives are exempt from both chalitz and yibum, indicating that there is no marriage to begin with. So why is it that in the case of a shoita, do we say there is no rabbinic marital institution? The Gemara answers: Cheresh v'chareshes. These are deaf mutes. The kaimo takanta de rabbanon. Tokinu luhu rabbanon nisuin. The expression "the kaima" means it will last. A cheresh and chareshes, where the marriage, it's true they're considered inept or incompetent, but it's not a situation where they're totally lacking any competency, and therefore, since we'll call them semi-competent. When they marry, they'll be able to maintain a married life. Their marriage will continue. So the Rabbonin, the institution of the Rabbonin, that they have marriage, it will last. So for something that will last, the Rabbonin say, okay, let's go ahead and institute rabbinic marriage for them. Shotev is shota, a man who is an imbecile, or a woman who is like that. Delo kaimo takata de Rabbonin. A let's say a man marries a woman who is who's lost her mind, that kind of marriage cannot take place. It's not going to last. Ein adam dor im nochash bekvifo achas. A man, this is a phrase or a saying, a man doesn't live with a snake in the same basket. Therefore, it's not a marriage that would last. It won't last more than a day. Lo tokinu rabbonin nisuin. So the rabbonin didn't bother instituting something that they knew at the outset wouldn't last. Umayshna koton velo tokinu rabbonin nisuin v'cheresh tokinu le rabbonin nisuin. Why is it that when it comes to a minor man, male, there is no rabbinic marriage? And when it comes to the man who is a deaf mute, there is rabbinic marriage. Cheresh delo osi lichla nisuin tokinu rabbona nisuin. With regard to the deaf mute, he's going to be that way permanently. So he has no, there's no hope on the horizon for him to enter a regular, full-fledged Torah-level marriage. So the Rabbanan, in order to accommodate him, that he should not remain without a wife, and so should not remain without... Rashi says, Kedei Shelo Yibatel, could very well be a reference to he shouldn't be batel from period of Arabia, from reproduction. So that he shouldn't be in that situation, the Rabbanan said, listen, we're going to institute for you a marriage that will be recognized on a rabbinic level. However, katan to asi lichla nisuin, the katan, he's a minor. It's just a matter of time till he reaches adulthood, till he becomes a bar mitzvah. So he's going to come to a level of full-fledged marriage. There's no need for the rabbanan to intervene. Lo tokin rabbanan nisuin. The Gemara asks, Vareik tano di asi lichla nisuin, the tokinu rabbanan nisuin. A girl who is a minor, and in the event that she has no father, we know that her mother or brother can hand her over in marriage, and that will be recognized as a rabbinic marriage. The same girl, if she just wait till she reaches to age 12, she can accept marriage on her own volition. So you see a case of something of a woman, of a person that reaches, just by waiting till the right age arrives, she comes to Nisuin of a Torah level, and yet the Rabbanan do intervene. The Gemara answers, Hasam shelo yinagu bo minak hefker. There, you're dealing with a girl, there's a difference. I hope that all the people who are major proponents of equal rights and equality and all that goes along with it won't be put off by this. Forgive the sarcasm, but there is a difference between a man and a woman. Women are subject to being violated by immoral type men. So in order to offer the girl whose father is dead, or the father is out of the picture, and all she has a mother or brother, so that she is protected from men that cannot control themselves, we enable her to enter marriage, a rabbinically recognized marriage, and now she'll have a husband who will take care of her, who will watch over her. The term minhag hefker is, as we said, immorality on the part of many men in the public. Umayshno tano de mimano, umayshno chareshes de lo mimano. Why is it that, with regard to a minor girl who was married off, as we just got finished saying, by her mother or brother, where there is a part of that deal is she can walk out of the marriage through her expressing her disinterest in remaining with the husband. Whereas when it comes to a woman who is a chareshes, the deaf mute woman, who also benefits from a rabbinically recognized marriage, but she doesn't have that miun option of walking out. The Gemara answers, the im came. We continue at the top of Kuf Yud Gimel. If she, the Chareshis, would have that ability, Mimni'i velo nasvilo, men would not ever want to marry them. So we'd have a situation where a Chareshis would never be married. So that in order to encourage men to marry a Chareshis, we take away, we don't provide them with that option called miyun. You'll ask, well, what about with regard to the minor girl? So Rashi addresses this at the top. If a chareshis would be granted the miyun possibility, you're dealing then with a woman who some man marries, and forever, permanently, he would have this, we'll call this type of threat that she poses of just walking out on him permanently, because you're dealing with a chareshis, and age is not a factor here. Avoktano, but with regard to a minor, gvul yesh law, there is a boundary in time. We say that she can do miyun, but only while she is a minor. So that gvul means there's a boundary in time. The analogy is so, but she isn't. Doesn't she pose a threat of being able to walk out on him on any, at any time? Yeah, she does, but only till she becomes an adult, 12 years old. Visavar, the husband, in the meantime, figures mefayasna lo kol shaito ad shiavor zman miyun. I'll be pleasant to her. I will appease her until the time of miyun passes, where she won't be able to be minus anymore. So the Tana does not pose the same type of threat, this timeless, unbounded threat as the Chareshis. Therefore, when it comes to the Chareshis, no miyun. Otherwise, men would not marry her. Another question. The question lasts a few lines. Umay shnok tana di ochla betruma. If a girl was married off in a rabbinic marriage by her mother, and she was married to a Kohen, the tana eats truma. That it, she's entitled to eat truma, which is a tithe that only Kohanim are allowed to eat, or of course their wives. And here we're dealing with a rabbinic marriage, and we're entitling her to eat truma. Maishna chareshis delo ochla betruma. And when a chareshis would marry a kohen, she would not be entitled to eating truma. Disnan, hey Rabbi Yochanan ben Gud gedola chareshis shesi avia shiyotza beget. Regarding a chareshis, Rabbi Yochanan tells us that she can be divorced even though she was married by her father, which is a full-fledged marriage. She can be divorced. V'al k'tana, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gedgula told us about a k'tana bas Yisrael sheniseis l'kohen, that married a kohen in a rabbinic marriage, shecheles betruma. The who in these cases of marriage, who eats of truma? The minor girl who was married off to a kohen. V'ilu chareshis lo'achla, but as far as the chareshis, she does not eat from truma. Only the ketana would eat from truma. So why is that? The Gemara answers, and the answer takes a few lines to develop. Gzeira shemo yachil chereish b'chareishis. If we allow a pikeach that married a chareishis, the pikeach, a kohen, was normal. If we allow her, the chareishis, to eat truma, we're afraid that in a case of a chereish marrying a chareishis, where again the chareishis is the wife, but in this case where the chereish marries a chereish kohen marries a chereishis, we're afraid that he will give her truma to eat. So the Gemara asks, so what? V'lechol? Let her eat truma. Katan eichol nevelishu. It falls into a big sukya. It's a major topic in and of itself, this issue of a minor eating that which is unkosher. It's an expression, but it's a nevela is unkosher meat, but it represents an entire area of halacha, of our attitude regarding a minor that violates things, that violates mitzvahs. So that it's true, on a Torah level, this chareishis is not supposed to be eating truma, because you don't have a Torah level marital bond over here, and she's a bas Yisrael. But nevertheless, her eating of truma, because she is an incompetent, it's like a minor eating that which is forbidden, and we don't stop that. That's the idea of it. We didn't mention that, but kotnochel aves, situation where the child is doing something wrong, the based in the outsiders don't stop that. We're not getting involved right now with the issue of chinuch, of how to educate children and all that, but as far as letter of the law is concerned, if a child is doing a sin, we don't have to intervene. So what's the problem if a Pikeach marries a Chareshes, let her eat truma. If what you're bothered by is the case of a Chareish marrying a Chareshes, and where the marriage is totally rabbinic, from both ends, from his end and her end, and he'll come to give her truma, that's not the end of the world, and even that's not the end of the world. So what's the problem? Answer: Gezeira Shemel Yachil Chareish bePikchus. If we allow the Chareishes married to a Pikeach to eat, so a Chareish married to a Pikchus. Now a Pikchus is a woman who is of sound mind, and she is duty bound to fulfill mitzvahs. So if she's not a Bas Kohen, what in the world is she doing eating truma? So, and we're afraid, though, if we allow the Pikech marrying a Chareishes for that wife to eat truma, which, once again, technically speaking, that should be okay. But we're afraid it might come to this case of a Chareish giving a Pikchus. The Gemara asks, the Chareish bePikchus nami lecho betruma de Rabbanon. A Chareish marries a Pikchus. We're saying there is a rabbinic bond there, so let her eat truma that's of a rabbinic nature. Not all tithes, not all vegetation when tithed is tithed on a Torah level. When it comes to olive oil and wine and grains, those are tithed on a Torah level. But when it comes to peaches and oranges, and we tithe them, that would be considered truma drabona, rabbinic truma. So if you have a rabbinic marriage, let the woman eat rabbinic truma. The Gemara answers, no, we're not comfortable with that. Gzeira dilma osi la'oichla betruma doraisa. That might come to a case of her eating truma doraisa, the Torah level truma, like we just described, wine or olive oil that has been tithed. The Gemara asks a new question: Umayshna Tana de Isla Ksuba, Umayshna Chareishes de Lesla Ksuba. Why do we provide a ksuba for a minor who got married, but we don't provide it for the deaf mute woman? Answer: the Im Kain, if a man would have to pay a ksuba to a deaf mute woman that he married, mimnini velo nasfi lo, he'll withhold himself and not marry her. Why should I marry a deaf mute and also be required to pay a ksuba? So, as in order to encourage men to marry deaf mutes, we let them know, we tell them that they don't have to, in the event of his divorcing her, they won't have to pay a ksuba. From where do you know that a ktana is entitled to a ksuba? Disnan hamimaenes. Now, a mimaenes is a woman who's a ktana, she's a minor, who's leaving against the husband's will. That is a provision that we make for the ktana. Hamimaenes vashnia v'ailinis ein lohen ksuba. A ktana who goes out of the marriage because on her own volition, because she decides to, so she does not get a ksuba. Avol yoytza beget uktana yesh lo ksuba. But a woman who is sent away because he divorces her, that's something he's initiating, so she gets a ksuba. So through this inference, we see that a girl, a minor, that is sent away by the husband, he initiates her divorce, she does get a ksuba. There were two other points mentioned in this brief source, a shnia of eiliness, that they don't have ksubas, but the shnia is a relationship that is prohibited on a rabbinic level, and an eiliness is a woman who is incapable of procreation. And it's a mekach tos. The man didn't know that before he married her, and had he known that, he never would have married her, so she doesn't get a ksuba. But that's not to be emphasized right now. we continue. V'chareishis minolon delesla ksuba. We mentioned before that the chareishis does not get iksuba, but how do you know that? Desanya. We have a Tanaic source. Note that we have a long answer marking. Chareish v'shoita shenosu pikos. A chareish is a deaf mute man or an imbecile that married normal women. Even though the cheresh became of soundness, he became healthy, and the imbecile became normal. Ein lohem aleihem klum. There is no claim upon them. Rashi says, Ein lohem aleihem klum, the Ein lohem das, we're looking at Rashi on the first line under the Gemara text. The Ein lohem das, they have no, when they got married, they had no mind. The Ein tano rishon tanai, and whatever conditions they made at the outset has no validity. The afal gav the tikkun rabbonin nisuin l'cheresh, even though the rabbonin instituted an instituted marriage for a cheresh, lo tokinu lo rabbonin ksuba minei. However, they didn't institute that she would receive a ksuba from him. Kenforsh lekamon, as the Gemara will explain later, why it's not necessary for the woman to receive a ksuba, because yosri mashal ish roitzel lisa isha roitzel inosei. There is sufficient motivation for the woman to want to be married. As the saying goes, more than the man wants to marry a woman wants to be married. That is, by the way, a topic in and of itself that is worthy of discussion, but not for right now. So, in these cases of a cheresh or a sheita that married women, even if the man's situation improves, there is no claim upon those men. Rotsa lekaimon. Yesh lohen ksuba mona. If they want to continue being married, so the ksuba that would be paid would be the sum of 100 zuz, as opposed to the standard ksuba of 200 zuz. Upikeach shenosa chareshes o shoita. A normal person that marries a chareshes, a deaf mute or an imbecile, afilu kosav lo mea mona, even if he wrote a very large ksuba, ksuboso kayemes me shirotso lizok binachosav. The amount that he writes to her, that he guarantees her, remains. He'll have to pay it up because apparently he did so on his own volition. He elected to injure his own property, to create a setback for himself. Now we want to focus on this case of the pikecha that married the chareshes, because that's the main point for our discussion. Does he have to pay her a ksuba? Well, only taima de rotza, because he wanted to write a ksuba for her. Haloi rotza, if he didn't want to, he didn't do so on his own, ain law. She doesn't get a ksuba. And you'll ask, why doesn't she get the ksuba? The imkain, if a man would be obligated to pay a chareshes wife, a ksuba mimnei velo nasvi law. People will withhold themselves and not bother marrying them in the first place. Ihachi, if that be the case, pikachas lecheresh, a normal woman who is married to a cheresh, to a deaf mute man, liskan lo ksuba, let her receive a ksuba, give her, let's say, encouragement to marry the cheresh, the imkain, because otherwise, mimnei velo mincevi, the woman will not want to marry him. So the Gemara explains you don't have to institute a ksuba in order to motivate her to marry him, because yoser mishish roitza lisa isha roitza linose, more than a man wants to marry a woman wants to be married. So as far as the issue of marriage is not taking place, when it comes to a normal man marrying a chareshes woman. The man figures he's got a lot of other choices, and he won't be sufficiently motivated to marry the chareshes, knowing that he'd have to pay a ksuba. However, when it comes to a normal woman and a chareish husband, the fear of the marriage not taking place doesn't apply, because the woman, even though she's a pikachas, is sufficiently motivated to marry, even if the husband happens to be a chereish, and hence there's no need to institute a ksuba payment from a chereish to the pikachas. And just to repeat ourselves, as far as the pikeach marrying a chareishis, we did not institute a ksuba, because then there would be mimnei velo nasvilo. People would hesitate, would avoid marrying them. Hahu chareish dahave b'shvusei de Rav Malchio. There was a chareish, a deaf-mute man, in the neighborhood of Rav Malchio. Anseve itza v'kosav lo arba mea zuzi minichsei. A woman was married unto him. In other words, the Chereish married a woman, and he wrote a ksuba of 400 zuz from his property. Now, in light of the Gemara we just learned, that wasn't something that needed to be done by letter of the law. Omar Rova, man chochim ki Rav Malchio, who is wise like the great Rav Malchio, the Gavra Rabahu, who was a great man, kosavar, he figured, it's true that by letter of the law, the Chereish doesn't have to provide a ksuba, but nevertheless, ilu rotza shivcho l'shamsho, milo zavnino lei. If the Chereish needed a maidservant to serve him, would we not buy one from him? Would we not take money from his property to provide him with a bondmaid? Kol shekein hachadika tarti. All the more so over here, where he benefits from both. He has a wife, and she will also take care of him. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.